The song that means it's time to start the Wild Things show. Man, do I love some Wild Things. My name is Josh and my co-host Robert. I know he loves some Wild Things too. How you feeling there, Robert?
Just peachy.
Yeah peachy. Well, today we're talking about one of our favorite Wild Things, but it might not be one of your favorite Wild Things, and that is the Eastern Diamondback Rattlesnake. That big, scary, evil, venomous snake that everybody wants to avoid.
Is it scary and is it evil?
I think those are some questions that we really need to approach here, because for a lot of people, just the word rattlesnake is enough to give them goosebumps and make them start thinking about, where's my shovel? Where's my shotgun? I need to go get that, because that's just how a lot of people react to these animals. And I think that's really unfortunate, because you're dealing with a really interesting, really beautiful animal if you just give them a chance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people are, I don't know, way too afraid for no apparent reason. You know, it's good to be guarded, obviously, if you don't know enough about snakes, period. But, you know, to automatically just think that everything with scales on it basically needs to be dispatched of,
Yeah. Well, now, obviously, you know, when we're dealing with rattlesnakes are venomous. And yeah, that amps up the fear factor a little bit for a lot of people. A lot of people have this feeling that venomous snakes are out to get them, that, you know, they're just sitting there and waiting for their chance to sink their fangs into you and inject that venom right up underneath your skin. And the thing about it is that it's a very hard to fight image that people have in their heads, but it's so inaccurate of what these animals are actually like.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe now, they're a lot more, they're not aggressive.
No, not at all.
I mean, you basically read any of the, if you actually do your homework, I mean, I don't know what the exact number is, but I guarantee you that well over 90% of your bites are because the person was trying to kill or handle it in some dumb manner.
People put themselves at risk almost all of the time.
Yep.
You know, if you look at the venomous snake bites overall in the United States, never mind rattlesnakes, but just venomous snakes, you'll see that there's a pattern there, that the snake bite victims are overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly young. And if you dig in a little deeper into how often alcohol is involved, you'll find that alcohol is usually involved. So what you got is young, stupid, testosterone-driven guys putting down their beer and saying, hey, watch this.
Exactly.
And that's probably the worst time that you could possibly interact with these animals, is when you're fueled by alcohol and braggadocio. It's not a good mix.
No, not at all.
Now, you grew up in Arizona, where there are a lot more rattlesnake species than what we have out here.
Most of any of the states in the U.S.
Which is a pretty impressive record, I think.
Pretty awesome.
And how many different rattlesnakes do you have in AZ?
I think it's 13 plus 4, like, subspecies or something like that.
And that's pretty awesome. Yeah, I mean, it must take some time to get to the point where you can actually identify all those different rattlers.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. You know, but there's certain areas where some only exist in little tiny areas. And then there's others that are pretty well broad spectrum found all over the whole state. You know, the coolest part is that, like, a lot of the fire departments and stuff have actually incorporated training so they can actually help remove the animal without harming it, which is pretty cool. because we've been building and building and building everywhere, so people have this stuff showing up in their yards.
And we have that same problem here, where you're constantly getting animals moved around by construction. You know, it's not that uncommon for people who live in an area near construction to suddenly have a rattlesnake show up in their yard or in the street in front of their house, because these animals are very site-fidelic. You know, they get into areas where they live, and they live in that area for a long, long time, probably their whole life.
Yeah.
So they get pushed out. They've got to find someplace else to go. Mm-hmm. So they're just looking for a place to be. And unfortunately, that's when a lot of these animals get killed.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
So the animals that we have here, despite your impressive record of number of different species in Arizona, we got the biggest here.
Yes,
Eastern,
you do.
Eastern diamondback rattlesnake.
We have the most venomous.
Well, ooh, great record. That's the one I'm going for. Is the largest native snake in North America. Not the longest, but the largest.
Right. Which a lot of people get that confused with a whole lot of animals in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like with pythons. You know, people think, well, you know, looking at big, big snakes, anacondas are the biggest, but reticulated pythons are the longest. They're just not quite as heavy-bodied. And the same way with rattlesnakes and indigo snakes. Indigo snakes get longer, but rattlesnakes are heavier-bodied and therefore are going to be a larger animal.
Yeah. And the Easterns are pretty darn impressive. I mean, they're so robust and just, they're... especially compared to some of the southwestern rattlesnakes, they're almost intimidating,
right?
With their girth.
Yeah, and anybody, even if you're not a snake fan, even if you're one of those guys who's out there with the shovel always at the ready, you gotta admit, these are attractive animals. You know,
oh, yeah.
Whether you like them the way they are, like Robert and I do, or you like them on a belt, they're still, it's a beautiful snake.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk a little bit about the habitat where these animals live. It's a habitat that is constantly shrinking, like we mentioned with the construction. So you're chasing these animals out of where they live. But well, what kind of habitat do they tend to prefer?
More of the palmetto and pine upper kind of drier habitat. I don't know. You're the naturalist. I forget what the exact term is for that. A little bit further inland, a little bit higher elevation.
I'm just testing you to see if you could come up with it.
I can't.
What if I said uplands? Would that make
uplands.
Sense?
Uplands. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, general uplands habitat. And that can be like what you were talking about with the pine and the palmetto, which is great. It can also be more of an oak-type scrub where you're not going to see quite as many of those animals, but you will see some. The common denominator there is sand. Sandy areas. That's what where you tend to find these snakes. And part of that is their prey. You know, a rattlesnake can eat a lot of different things, but really Eastern diamondbacks have a small preferred prey range species. They really go after cottontail rabbits and bobwhite quail.
Okay, that's a new one on me. I really honestly did not know that it was part of their primary diet.
Absolutely. Far and away
their two
favorite foods right there. Now, they will take rodents of almost any kind. They will eat other birds. It's part of the benefit of being venomous is that you can actually prey on these birds that a lot of other snakes might not be able to, because you can kill them pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Still pretty fascinating because it's a totally new one on me.
Yeah. So the rattlesnake's venom exists for hunting purposes. It's there to kill prey. It's not there to kill you or me or really to defend themselves. If you look at the number of people who are bitten by rattlesnakes versus the number of people who are envenomated by rattlesnakes, and that's kind of a big word. Envenomated means that they actually inject venom into the bite after they bite you. Not everybody who is bitten by a rattlesnake gets envenomated.
Right. It's called a dry bite.
And dry bites are pretty common.
Very. Not for me, but...
Well, not for me either, fortunately, but I'm smart enough to not handle these things when I'm drunk and stupid.
Right.
You know, dry bites are the defensive bites.
Yeah.
Any snake will bite. It's pretty much what they've got.
They don't have hands. They don't have claws. They don't have any of that. The teeth are literally their hands. That's their defensive mechanism. That's all they have to use to defend themselves.
You open your mouth and you point it at what's threatening you, and you hiss and you show your teeth, and if it keeps coming at you, then you bite, because that's all that there is.
Right.
But if you're a venomous snake, like a rattlesnake, like an eastern diamondback, you don't want to give up that venom if you can help it, because the venom is so important for their hunting, and not just for killing the prey, but the venom also contains enzymes that will start to break down those prey animals once they've been envenomated, and that's part of their digestion process. So venomous snakes actually start digesting their food before they swallow it.
Kind of like the way a spider does.
Kind of the way a spider, yeah, exactly. And the difference here is that all spiders have to be venomous in order for their eating style to work.
Absolutely.
With snakes, they don't all have to be venomous.
Right. Pretty cool.
So what you have there is an animal that takes a little bit of time to build back up the venom that it carries in its venom glands. And if it wastes all that venom on you, then it's not going to have the venom that it needs in order to successfully feed.
Right. They don't want to waste it.
Yep. It's expensive stuff. I mean, it takes a long time to make an amount of venom to fill those sacs. I mean, it's a modified saliva, but it's modified pretty heavily, and it is energy intensive to produce.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes, I don't know, I forget what the time frame is, but each snake's a little bit different, and it also depends on the food that it's ingesting. But it's a long period of time.
Yeah, and you can see that if you don't believe us, then you can look at the rates of time that it takes for snakes that are milked for their venom. How long does it take for them to build it back up to be milked again? And it takes a while.
And you know, the small amount that they actually get.
Yeah, you can't go around milking a rattlesnake every other day. It's just not going to work. You're not going to get what you need out of it.
No. And I wish I remembered the time frame it was, because I got the pleasure of meeting Bill Haas years ago. And he was actually telling me the time frame for each type of snake that he would milk, whether it was the Easterns or the corals or some of the different cobras. But some of them were actually like months in between milking.
Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Now, Bill Haas, for those of you who haven't heard that name before, was a guy who used to have a Miami Serpentarium, which actually was not in Miami.
No. Yeah, it was. Well, it was right outside of Miami.
Miami-ish. The Miami-ish Serpentarium would have been a much better name for it.
Right.
So
started off as a sideshow, and then he moved here and turned it into a milk, you know, taking venom from all sorts of snakes. And
right here in Punta Gorda.
For medical purposes, to turn into anti-venom. Pretty fascinating guy.
Yeah, and I unfortunately didn't have a chance to actually meet him. And I mean, he lived for 99 years, so I don't know what my problem was, why I didn't go talk to him.
You're procrastinating.
Probably.
Too many other irons in the fire.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
I'm going to get some of those out of there later at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know when. So Robert and I actually, not too long ago, went searching for eastern diamondbacks because, you know, as many people happen to have these animals just come crawling into their yard that don't want these things around, Robert and I, being the type of guys who would love to see them in our yards, aren't so lucky. So we actually had to go out and hunt for some of these things.
Yeah, and they're not that easy to find.
Because you have to get into an area not only where the habitat is good, but where you have a sufficient prey base.
Yeah.
And a place where you don't have people who are killing them and removing them from the area.
Right.
So you put all those things together, and then you want it to be an area that you can actually drive into or walk into and actually search it. And you're pretty limited in where you can go.
Yeah.
The spot that we chose is one that we're not going to disclose to you. It is in Charlotte County, and it does have drivable roads. So we're in the truck, we're driving along, we're looking for snakes. Now, you might not think that you can look for snakes while you're driving, but you definitely can. And we weren't actually looking so much for snakes as we were looking for snake tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, we're playing Indians is what we were, tracking animals. Pretty cool, though, you know, because, I mean, you can actually distinguish as you're driving along where animals have crossed the road in certain dirt roads or even on the dirt berm along the edge of a paved road. And you don't have to be doing 100 miles an hour. Just take your time and look, and that's what we were doing.
it really helps if you can kind of loaf along there instead of going super fast. If you can putt along at 6 or 8 miles an hour, that's probably going to work a lot better.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the reptile cruising or road cruising that Robert and I do, we do at night because a lot of snakes tend to come out at night. But this particular trip was a daytime trip, which is kind of unusual for us. But
a little different.
And we weren't actually, to tell the truth, looking for diamondback rattlesnakes. We were looking for something that's even rarer and even harder to find.
Right. Same habitats, too.
Same habitat, same general area, but an animal that, for whatever reason, probably because it requires a larger territory as an individual, has gotten in even worse trouble than the diamondbacks, and that's the eastern indigo snake.
Yeah.
And we did not come across an eastern indigo snake. We looked, we saw what we think might have been some eastern indigo tracks, but we did not succeed in our primary target. But we had kind of hoped that as a secondary species we could look for, we might run across some eastern diamondbacks, and we definitely did find one of those.
It was a cool second place winner. I'll take it.
Now, when we first saw the track in the road, it was actually you, me, and a friend of ours in the truck. Yep. And we all jump out of the truck because you see the track, you don't know exactly which direction was it going. You know, there's obviously something that looks like somebody has dragged a big, thick rope kind of in a winding path across this road. So you see that the snake was clearly here, but which way did he go?
Right. And go both directions. You know, you go to the left, I'll go to the right.
It helps to have more than one person in the vehicle when you're doing that.
Absolutely.
And it definitely helps to have sharp eyes out there. You know, somebody who is able to spot those snakes in the camouflage that they're going to get into as quickly as they can.
Yeah.
So you guys went right.
Yes.
And you found what?
We went wrong.
Yeah, you did. So because you guys had gone right, and because I said, well, they both went that direction, they're probably going to find it. But you know what? I'll go off the other side and see what I can see. It didn't take too long before I realized that we definitely had a snake on my side of the road.
Yeah, you found it within a couple feet.
And I probably would have found it a lot faster if it had still been laying on the dirt in the open. But it was not.
Oh, no.
Nice and tucked in the vegetation over there on the side.
Yeah, it was unbelievably camouflaged.
And even knowing that it was there, it's really hard to tell that it was there.
Because
I took some pictures of this animal while it was still in the position that we found it in, and I've shown people those pictures, and they look at the pictures, and I say, look, there's a rattlesnake right here. It's right in the middle of this picture.
Find Waldo.
Yeah, but I make it easy for you, as easy as I can. It's in the middle. Yeah. It takes up a third of the frame. Yeah. And they just look and look and look, and they don't see it.
Yeah.
You literally have to outline it for them and say, look, here, see this pattern? See this? This is the head. See this? This is where the tail is. And then it's like one of those magic eye tricks where it just suddenly, bam, materializes there. It's like, whoa. Where did that come from?
It's scary. It's really, really fascinating and cool at the same time. And I'm used to looking for them and seeing them, and even then, there's many times where I've walked by snakes.
Well, there's many times when all of us have walked by snakes. And for most people, that's a positive thing because they never even know that it was there.
Right.
For us, it sucks. Yeah. I'd much rather found it.
Yeah, exactly. But in your case, you did.
Yeah, and then as idiots who like snakes are wont to do, we took a snake hook and we were able to get the animal coaxed away from the woods where it was headed towards and back out onto the dirt road, where we then proceeded to take pictures of it, because that's what normal people do, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you go around messing with a rattlesnake, okay? This animal is just trying to have a quiet morning. Just trying to bask a little bit in the sun on the road and then get off the road, off into the woods, down to some place where it can rest for the rest of the day. And what do? We come along, we mess with it, we manipulate it with a hook, we get out in front of it and take pictures of it, we stand over it like big predatory birds or something. You'd think that this animal would be really freaked out.
Yeah.
And how did she react?
Didn't care at all. She actually just more or less wanted to get away.
That was her only response, was to try to crawl off.
She did not coil up. She did not rattle. All her whole instinct was flight. There was no fight there. It was actually pretty surprising how docile it was.
Well, you know, one of the things that has made it a little bit easier on the rattlesnakes lately, and something that makes it a little bit harder for people, is, you know, the buzz butts, as they used to be called, because they were buzzing every time anybody got near them, shake their tail. I mean, it's a rattlesnake, right? It's supposed to rattle. Unfortunately, if you're a rattlesnake and you live in areas where people live that want to kill rattlesnakes, if you rattle, then what you've done is you've just given yourself away. You've just offered yourself up as a target for somebody to fill with buckshot or for somebody to take a hoe and chop off your head.
Yep.
If you're quiet, though, if you don't rattle, if you don't have that automatic response to a threat, then chances are, because your camouflage is so good, that they're not going to see you at all, and you're probably going to survive that encounter with people. So you take that out over 15 generations, 25 generations of rattlesnakes, and pretty soon what you get is rattlesnakes that are much less inclined to actually rattle.
Yeah. Basically, it's a silent rattlesnake.
Pretty much. I mean, it still has rattles. They still function.
Still perfectly capable. They've just chosen not to for basically survival purposes at this point.
Well, and it's not really a matter of choosing not to. It's a matter of the animals that didn't have or had less of the instinct to rattle being the ones that survived and that passed on their genes to their offspring. So just like any other trait, that trait can be inherited. So you have animals that are less likely to rattle, producing animals that are less likely to rattle. And eventually it gets to the point where it's really difficult to get some of these rattlesnakes, especially if you find them in heavily populated areas, to actually make any kind of noise.
Yeah, that's true.
It's unnatural selection at work.
It's pretty cool, actually.
Well, it is.
Sad that it had to evolve that way, but still cool.
But also freaking people out about the idea that these rattlesnakes that live in the more urban and suburban areas are much less likely to make any kind of noise to let you know they're there.
Yeah. It's all right. They won't know they're there, so nobody gets hurt. Both the snake and the person go on their own way.
At least that's the idea. And it works out pretty well most of the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. I mean, it's not a guaranteed thing because we are dealing with animals that are venomous. So if you have rattlesnakes in your neighborhood and you're concerned about it, and let's say that you have children or you have dogs, what would be the right ways to react to that? And Robert, I'm going to let you answer this one because you grew up in an area where there's a heck of a lot more rattlesnakes than there are here.
Honestly, walk the other way. You know, don't torment them. Don't do anything. Just literally stand back, let them do their thing, and keep on going your own way without interfering with them.
And what do you do about your kids?
You teach them the same way. They're nice to look at from a distance, but do not bother them. Leave them alone, and they will go about doing their own thing and will not bother you if you don't bother them.
Yeah, you know,
that's all wives' tales with snakes actually chasing after you and all that stuff. That doesn't happen.
No. The thing that will happen sometimes is if you are between where the snake is and the cover the snake wants to get to, it may try to go through you to get to where that cover is. You know, we'll talk about cottonmouths another day, but that's the big thing about cottonmouths is they're supposed to be aggressive and chase you. No, they're trying to get to the water that you're standing in front of. That's the only place that animal is going to feel safe. He needs to get there right now.
Yep. They want to get to the safest spot possible, and if you happen to be in that path, you know, that's kind of your fault for not paying attention to your surroundings in general.
Yep. And I've got a couple of dogs that, you know, my wife takes them on walks. Every now and then they do come across snakes, not rattlesnakes, but black racers and yellow rat snakes and stuff like that. I've trained my dogs to be snake averse. Neither of those animals is going to get very close to a snake because using snakes, artificial snakes, actual live snakes, I've scared them enough with those snakes that they don't want to approach. If it smells like a snake, if it looks like a snake, with poor Penny, even sometimes a stick is enough to startle her. So she is definitely not going to walk up on a snake and try to bite it or try to pick it up or anything like that. It's not going to happen. Snake-averse.
That's good, though.
It's very good, and I wish more people would do that because, unfortunately, dogs do tend to get bitten more than people because dogs put their nose where it doesn't belong.
Yeah.
The poor things.
Yes.
So, anyway, enough snake fascination for one day. We are going to talk about other things next time, we promise. But you know what? We're probably going to come back to snakes again because Robert and I, we just love snakes. We can't help ourselves because we love all wild things. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Creepy and the kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky. Think I love you, but I wanna know for sure. Come on, hold me tight.